Hello, this is Diane Krabaniak, Executive Director of the Westmoreland Bar Association. This podcast is titled The How and Why of Social Media and explores how Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter are being used by attorneys to help grow and manage their law practice. Today's speakers are Michael Quattrini, Young Lawyer Chair, and Anthony Bompiani, past Young Lawyer Chair. So let's hear how they're using social media in their law practices.
But today we're going to talk a little bit about social media. And when you think of social media, it's a little bit different from your mainstream media. And I coined it as more self-interactive, meaning that you're in control of the content. It's different from CNN online. It's different from Fox News online and your Time magazine, whereas they have reporters. They're trying to put together stories along a factual byline. This allows you to create your own stories, create your own online presence. And the different things that people typically put into social media categories are blogs, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, MySpace. You've probably heard a lot of these things in the news. You've probably read them in some of the legal journals. So we're going to kind of walk through each one today, kind of give you a nuts and bolts of which one, what each one does. And the thing I want everyone to keep in mind here is that you shouldn't be scared to do this. I know a lot of people are. I know a lot of people think, I don't want the world knowing my business. But there's a way for everyone, depending on your level of comfort and privacy, to have an online presence in addition to your website. We're really not going to cover websites too much today. We think, you know, most people have them. Most people understand what a website does. These are kind of in addition to your website. So you can do everything from all of this stuff to some of it and control the amount of information that gets out.
Can we just do just a quick survey? Who in here has a Facebook account? Who in here has a LinkedIn account? Who in here has a Twitter account? For those of you, who in here has a MySpace account? I was going to say, I'd be shocked if anybody raised their hand for that one, and we'll get to why in a bit. But for those of you that have Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter, who uses it for business? Okay, see, one of the things we're going to talk about today is that you actually can, and it's actually, it can actually be very profitable if you do it the right way.
And this was, I thought, a great quote from, this is a forthcoming book that's being published by the American Bar Association Law Practice Management section by the two authors at the bottom. But it says, social media is not a fad or a frivolity, but a paradigm shift sweeping both the legal profession and society at large. And so when you think, this is just I think I'm just going to let this pass. I think it's really important for everyone to understand that you should have some type of online presence. And I think sometimes in addition to your website. I will be the first to admit, I did not have a Facebook account until December of 2009. I just kept pushing it away. I don't know why. And then once I did it, I thought to myself, what took me so long to do this? Because I find it extremely helpful. I think it's entertaining at times, but it's very, very convenient for keeping in contact with people. These are some of the really good reasons for why you should get into social media. The number one is the low or no cost. It's free to be on Facebook. It's free to be on Twitter. It's free to be on YouTube. And one of the articles I read coined social media as the great equalizer, meaning that Reed Smith has plenty of money to spend on advertising and marketing and all that, the really heavy bound paper that they sent out to all their clients. Well, when it's free, you can do as much as Reed Smith or Kirkpatrick and Lockhart as a single practitioner as they can. And yeah, they may have a full-time marketing person, but if you put in the time, you can have the same direct impact and relationship with your clients that they can. And so that was the building a brand, direct impact with audience. It's really helpful for searching for new talent. Putting out, if you're looking for a new paralegal, a new secretary, a new lawyer, you can put ads out on these different social media networks. And this is where all the young people are hanging out, and they pay attention to what's coming on to your page, or to everywhere else.
Just another thing, too, contrary to popular belief, it does not take that much time. I know a lot of people who don't do it, you know, that ask me, you know, why do you, I don't have enough time in my day to do that. Why do you do that? How do you find time to do that? It doesn't take much time at all, especially now with the smartphones. You know, the internet, it's so easy. It takes a whole 2 seconds to go in and change a status or write somebody a message or send somebody an email through Facebook. I mean, it does not take as much time at all. And then the leisure end of it, I mean, you can do that as your leisure. But I think that's one of the great myths out there, that it's incredibly time-consuming, and it's not.
This next one was a quote. It's called The Informed Consumer. This also came from that book. And I thought this was a really great concept. And to back it up, they put a statistic behind it. There is a stat out there that people who are diagnosed by medical doctors, be them a primary care physician or a specialist, will one-third of the time disagree with the diagnosis because they read something else online. So they went to WebMD, they went to another medical site and read about it and thought, you know what, nah, I think it's something else. I mean, that's pretty incredible to think that you would disagree with something you read online, but it really puts the pressure on people to understand that they do their homework online now. And you're not just going to go to the Yellow Book and look at babysitters, or you're not going to go to the Yellow Book or anywhere other conventional means of communicating anymore and just look someone up and go through the pages. Typically, most people, and especially the younger generation, they're going to start to do their online homework. And this just struck me the other day as I was putting together the presentation. I was at a hearing, and the gentleman was just telling me he got back from Italy. And I was like, oh, man, that is really awesome. And he looked at me and said, oh, actually, you studied in Italy. You probably really like it there. I've never told this person I studied in Italy. But they must have read my profile. They must have done their homework on me prior to going there. And that was actually another attorney. So it shows you that people go online all the time to do their extra homework. So that's what they meant by the informed consumer. And do you want to talk about staying ahead of the curve? It's kind of a necessary evil.
Yeah, staying ahead of the curve. I mean, right now, you know, the way technology the pendulum has swung, nearly everybody is doing these types of things now. So whether it's entirely beneficial or not, it's important to do it. And one of the main examples that I actually use with, we'll get to a little bit later, is LinkedIn. I have a LinkedIn account. I've never had anybody really contact me through LinkedIn. Haven't generated any business through LinkedIn, but it's a necessary evil, because if there are other attorneys on LinkedIn and I'm not on LinkedIn, I feel that, you know, maybe I am missing out on business, or maybe I am missing out on something. And you all know how our business works. You don't immediately get the referral. It might be a year, it might be 2 years down the road when someone finally needs something. So that's the whole thing with staying ahead of the curve and utilizing these things as a necessary evil.
We'll start with Facebook. It seems to be the most used social network in the country. We're talking about 300 plus million people, and it just started in 2004. And I consider it the new Rolodex. You know, when I remember growing up, my mom has an address book. She still has it. It's all beat up, and it has all of our cousins' addresses in it and friends and family all over the country. You can barely read it anymore. I've never started one of those because now I have Facebook. I can connect with those people simply by asking them to be my friends, to be one of my contacts. And so when I wanted to plan something down here for the young lawyers, a happy hour, my friend from high school happens to run 111. I couldn't get in touch with him by phone. I sent him a Facebook message. He called me a half an hour later, and we were able to work it out pretty easily.
Michael, you have to convince me of this.
Sure.
That I would want to use Facebook as opposed to email, where I can do the same thing, have my entire family, all my friends, and I can have him in my contact list, push a button, and the same thing can happen. I don't see the difference.
Here's the difference. You have all those email addresses. What happens when you don't have the email address you need for that friend that you went to law school with who happens to live in Minnesota? And so this was a gentleman. I didn't have any of his contact information. I knew him. We were friends on Facebook. And so it was an easy way for me, without having any of his contact information, to know where I could find him. And so, yes, for email, it's fantastic for family and friends that you keep in touch with. But for when you're looking for someone that you might have lost contact with, or a family member you don't talk to a lot, that you don't have their email, you don't know where they've moved since they lived in Minnesota, they retired to Arizona, this is a way for you to go in and type in Jack Smith, and, you know, Jack Smith, Duquesne Law School, and it might pop up that, oh, there he is in Arizona, there's a picture of him, that's him, you can contact him. So that's what I consider kind of a new Rolodex for not just the people that you see all the time, but for the people you're looking for. And I thought that was a good example when I contacted the guy down at 111.
Just to follow up on that, too, I have almost 600 friends on my Facebook account. I know every single person that I'm friends with because I have a lot of personal things on my account, and the people that I'm friends with, I don't care what they see because I know that they know me well enough that they know who I am and they know the types of things I like to do. But out of those 600 people, if it weren't for Facebook, I would probably talk to 5% of them, maybe, on a daily basis. I'd probably talk to 8 or 10% of them ever. I mean, a lot of them are high school friends that there's no way in heck I would ever talk to them. College friends, there's no way in heck I'd ever talk to them. Not because I don't like them, just because, you know, I'm doing my thing now, they're doing their thing. I don't know any of them. Send out blast emails through Facebook, and he has no, other than knowing their name and knowing that they're on Facebook, he has no other way of contacting them and never had to discover any other way of contacting them.
So
it makes it a little bit easier.
Right. So it's a way, you don't have to talk to them all the time, but it's a nice way to kind of have a connection with your friends. Plus, the friends of those friends might look at your page one day. They might be someone that lives in Latrobe or lives in Greensburg and needs an attorney, and says, oh, well, my friend Sally is friends with Anthony. Maybe I'll call him and see what the deal is with what kind of law he does and everything else. So this is my Facebook page. It's my wife and I in the left-hand corner. And you can see this is what all of this stuff in this area is considered my wall. Now, I can make this as much information as people want to see or as little as they want to see. So if you go on as a new user and you looked up Michael Quattrini, you actually wouldn't be able to see all that stuff because I keep it private only to my friends that I'm connected with. And so you could ask me to be your friend. I may say yes, I may say no, but it allows you to set the highest level of privacy controls that you want of all the social media networks. You could have no picture. You could have just Michael Quattrini, Greensburg, Pennsylvania. You can have picture, you can let the whole world see what you do. But you can control the level of privacy. Mine, I let my friends kind of see the different stuff that I post. But the key is, Anthony, you were showing me your law firm. Anthony actually put his law firm on Facebook.
Okay, before, just to give you a quick example, what I'm clicking right now up here on the Facebook, is it okay if I go there? This is going to be the news feed. So this is everything that's going on with Michael's Facebook friend at this time. So you click here, and you see all these. 21 other friends have changed their profile pictures. You see this Lindsay Bauman write something. I'm going to do most recent because I actually just updated mine from my iPad.
So anyway, basically what happens is, right, yeah.
Yeah, I'll
so
go do it real
There's
quick.
Two different things. I can see my profile and I can post for others to see. This news feed area is all of my friends. So when Anthony updates his profile.
So there, I just wrote that like about a minute ago. It says it right there.
And so I'll be able to see that. Oh, Anthony's right in the middle of a presentation today. Or it's bring your dog to work day at my friend Lindsay's school who lives in Florida.
Right.
Do I pay attention to everything everyone says? No. If it's a slow day and I'm waiting for a hearing for an hour and I can look at it on my phone, yeah, I might scroll through those things. But again, it's always there. If you want to, you can pay attention to it as much as you want or as little as you want. And I will tell you that my aunt, my dad's oldest sister, she's 63, is a Facebook crazy. She loves it. It's her perfect opportunity to be able to send messages to all her nephews and nieces, post a million pictures a day, all that different stuff. And so you can use it for business, you can use it for pleasure, but again, it's a nice opportunity to have a constant connection.
Yeah, right. And you can be as selective as you want in who you accept as friends. Like I said, other than Bill McCabe and Dave Carruthers, everybody on my friends list are my friends. So you can be as selective as you want.
He was nice enough to accept his friendship. I wasn't.
But these are the personal accounts. We went to both Michael's. This is actually the news feed, so this is everybody. This is Ken Stillwell, is actually my cousin that Michael's friends with on Facebook. And he must be working pretty hard because he says that, what does a golf course look like? I forget. So he probably hasn't been there in a while. We'll go to my... There's my wife. There's my... Okay. Now, this is just an example. Obviously, I haven't updated in a while, and that's not a good thing whenever you're trying to maximize the benefit of Facebook. But what I do is, this is my law firm page. These are the 311 members that are fans down here in the corner. I have the ability to message every single one of them at once anytime I want to. And I have the ability to write things on the wall, which you'll see here. And what I do is every time I write something, I have a link to my website. And the reason why is because if anybody knows anything about web traffic and search engine results, is the more traffic you have flowing to your website, the higher it's going to be on all the search engine lists. And the more times people search for a particular term, maybe Greensburg attorney, Youngwood attorney, Westmoreland County attorney, whatever, the more hits that your firm has, the more likely that you're going to be up there near the top. So if someone, you have no clue who they are, looking for a law firm or an attorney to do something for you, the likelihood that you're going to be up on the top is a little bit better. So what I try to do, instead of just writing like, here are the rules for custody in Pennsylvania, or something boring and stupid like that, that no one would really have an interest unless they need that. I try to take little articles that I find, like that first article there, Harry Potter author sued for plagiarism. And I put a little link up there because I figured, that might catch the eye of one of my 311 law firm friends, or 570 or however many regular Facebook friends. And then what happens is whenever they click on that link, it takes them directly to my webpage and directly to my blog.
Is that Bridge in Youngwood?
That's actually the that's the Depot Street Bridge.
Michael's never seen it at night.
Yeah,
it looks different.
And the web allows you to be creative too. But anyway, that's the.
And then Anthony has an entire blog on his. And we're going to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. There was one in particular. It must have been a little bit older, but there was one in particular that I wrote, or maybe I wrote it on my personal page. But it was about, there was a situation where, and I can't remember if it was a local judge or who it was, but someone made the prosecutor or the defense remove ashes from their forehead during closing arguments. I guess they had left and they had went to a church on Ash Wednesday, and they came back with ashes. And in fact, I actually stated that wrong. The judge actually didn't make them do it. The judge brought it up, they discussed it, and the attorney agreed to wipe the ashes clean. So that was one of the articles, because I figured that might be a little bit sensitive of an article, because I'm sure there are people that would obviously defend that and people that would say that it was stupid. And of course, wouldn't you know, as soon as I put it up there, people on Facebook just started popping out comments. And you might think, like, oh, well, big deal, people were commenting on an article that you have posted on there. How does that benefit you? It benefits me because they know that I'm there. They know that I'm there every day of the week. They know what I do. I don't, from my personal web page, I never market directly. I never write, like, oh, hey, call me if you ever need an attorney or anything. I never do anything like that. I just write my personal things that I'm doing throughout the day. If I see a movie that I like, if I'm at my kid's baseball game and he does well, whatever. And the benefit of it is that they know I'm there. They've seen my page. They've seen my information. They see what I do for a living. They know my phone number. They know my email. They know the way to get a hold of me. And any time that they need someone, most likely a lot of those people are going to call me. And it's happened immensely. I mean, there are people that will call me to help them that would have never, ever, 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 ever called me if it weren't for Facebook. And it's not because they don't like me. It's just because either they didn't even know that I was an attorney, or they didn't know where I was practicing, or they didn't know anything about me. But now, because of this, every single day they know I'm there, or every other day, or you know, four times a week, or however many times I update it. And that's the biggest benefit.
And that's going back to that direct contact, direct communication with your clients. It's a continuous loop. They get a little bit more comfortable with you, and you're always in front of them. You don't always have to be in front of them hawking your business, but you're always kind of around and in their life. So that's the basics of Facebook. You put together your own page. You put on your page what you want to put on there. One picture. You can put 100 pictures, 1,000 pictures. You can be friends with who you want. You can show your friends as much information as you want. It's all up to you. So we're going to shift a little bit to MySpace. And you can see on your slides here, MySpace is similar to Facebook. You have the ability to put together a profile. And at the beginning, MySpace and Facebook were going neck and neck. Facebook was kind of considered the younger generation thing. MySpace was an ability for adults to have pages. So basically, but it'll tell you what's going on with Facebook versus MySpace now. The CEO of MySpace recently said, you know what, I don't even consider them a competitor anymore because Facebook is so far ahead in terms of single-person usage rather than Facebook. Facebook is owned by News Corp, who owns Fox News. They're shifting a lot of their focus to just media-generated business. A lot of bands, a lot of small-town bands. You can start a page, put your music up there, hope you get identified. But as for the personal communication standpoint, Facebook really has taken the overall lead and is, I don't think, going to cede any ground from here on out.
I always say, I honestly, whether this is true or not, but this is just my understanding of it, is that MySpace is a little sleazier, little more infested with things that as adults, as children shouldn't be doing, but as adults, obviously, we don't want to have any contact with, and we certainly don't want our businesses to have contact with. I don't know if that's true or not, because since Facebook became popular, I have never even... I tried to open my MySpace page today, and I don't even remember the password or anything, so because I haven't been on it for probably 3.5-4 years. So it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit... And now, what I've read, too, before this thing, to prepare for this, is that MySpace is really moving a lot towards entertainment. So a lot of, like, makeshift musicians and bands and everything are using that more for a way to get their music out and that sort of thing. So that's just my opinion.
I think MySpace allows things to be posted there that Facebook never wouldn't. I know I've used, in trial, things that I've printed from MySpace on the opposing party's page as evidence because they just allow... Really sleazy things to be posted.
And we're gonna get to that. That's actually one of the lessons to take away today.
Absolutely.
One of the things we're gonna talk about is the use of Facebook, the use of social media as evidence. So I know they're doing it a lot in workers' compensation, but again, that's a little bit later on. We're gonna talk a little bit about Twitter. Now Twitter's nowhere near as big as MySpace and Facebook at this point. But Twitter is a totally different social medium. Again, you have your own profile. And then you can type in little messages, and whoever signs up to follow you gets that message. Okay? You're limited to 140 characters, and then it goes out. So I'll give you a little bit of a use of my Twitter page. Our firm has a Twitter page. And anytime we have a new blog posting... Anytime, recently, I blogged that Dennis Rafferty was in the Tribune Democrat, quoted for the Laurel Valley School Board. And so I put the article on our blog, but then I also tweeted it to any of our followers. And you can see that he was in a couple different ones. And we also, on our blog, we'll put, you know, our newsletter articles, and that was one of them. Back on January 12th, personal injury article we entitled Picking Up the Pieces. So again, I don't use Twitter a lot. I don't follow a lot of people on Twitter, but it's one more thing I thought was necessary for us to have for some of our clients that have Twitter. They want to see different stuff that we're doing. It's another way to get in touch with them. I don't consider Twitter as important as Facebook or LinkedIn in terms of generating an online presence, but it's just something in addition to those things that you might want to consider if you want to continually get messages out.
One of the neat things about Twitter is that there are media outlets on Twitter that are following people. I know, I can't remember which one it was, but one of the WTAE TV people that is following me and never did a story or anything, but commented on or questioned me, asking, you know, emailed or whatever about something that I wrote. And it's just good to know that, you know, that's another way maybe to send out a quick, you know, blurb if you want to do some sort of a press release. The way I use Twitter a lot, like I said about before with Facebook, about not using any direct type of marketing. Twitter I do. Twitter, I'll put something up specifically about my practice, about me, whatever. And I also use it for kind of like Facebook too, but I only gear it towards my practice. So, you know, if I have a criminal motions court one day, I'll put that on Twitter. And what I do is I always include a link to my website. And again, the reason why is because the goal is to drive as much traffic as possible to your website to increase the number of hits that you get, which in turn increases the probability that you're going to be found on the internet, which eventually gives you more clients.
And in terms of Twitter, one of the biggest reasons I wanted to talk about Twitter today was it may not be our firm that uses Twitter a lot, but a lot of individuals like to tweet what they're doing through the day. Just grabbed a sandwich, at a presentation. Well, recently there's been a spate of people, jurors, using Twitter that can eventually come back to haunt them. A couple tweets that I saw, this was over the last year or so, there was a murder trial, I think, in Massachusetts. And the defense attorneys were kind of monitoring the Twitter accounts of the jurors to see if, you know, they said anything improper. Twice, one of them said, fry him, and another one said, why won't the guy just vote guilty already and get this over with? And they used those tweets, they used those messages that were posted to go back to the judge and say, judge, well, I think we need a mistrial here because this shows you the mentality of what's going on in the jury box. Some people have tweeted in the middle of trials, you know, terrible witness. And so you can use different things like this as evidence. And so, again, you may not use it as much for your business, but I think it is crucial, especially if you do a lot of trial work, to consider looking at Twitter, looking at the Twitter accounts of the people that you're dealing with to see if they say anything. And so it's something that we wanted just to bring to your attention for your business, but also for your actual practice.
Just real quick, you'll see here I have 1,467 people following me on Twitter. I probably know 100 of them. It doesn't matter if you know them or not. I don't expect to get one of those 1,467 people as clients. But what I do expect is for them to click on my link every once in a while, which, again, drives traffic to my website. So I don't care who they are. I don't care if I know them or not. Because I don't care if they know that I'm in a divorce master's hearing for the past 2 days. I write whatever I want to write on here, and that's it.
Anyway, from there, we're going to switch a little bit to LinkedIn, okay? As I considered Facebook your new Rolodex for your friends and your family, I consider LinkedIn your more professional Rolodex. This is a site where all of the profiles are very, very professional. I don't put anything on, you know, no one puts any, you know, fun pictures from a Jimmy Buffett concert or, you know, at the beach, yay, kind of status updates. This is a very straightforward, almost like a living business card. Mine has my, I think mine's up there. There we go. Mine has my profile. You know, it says that I do have that many connections. It gives contact information. It gives a link to our website and the blog that we write. It has the ability to actually pull our blog right into my profile. Again, this is a nice opportunity to have a very professional page. You know, if you're really not into Facebook, this is a nice opportunity to have that professional page. And what I actually use it for as well, I can join different groups. I'm in the Duquesne Law School group. I'm in the Dickinson College group. And people that have gone to school with me at Dickinson have sent me messages through here to say, hey, I didn't realize you were in Pittsburgh. We should get together. Or what kind of law do you do? One of the other ones that I follow is a workers' comp analysis group. It's mostly insurance companies. It's mostly defense attorneys. But I follow it, you know, because they're basically discussion forums. And every so often I'll see a discussion forum that I think is interesting, and I'll read it. And so much like a listserv that you get through email, they have different forums and discussion groups on LinkedIn for different areas of law, different industries. And so if you are slowly wading into social media and you want a little bit more of an online presence, LinkedIn's a very safe, straightforward, professional website to have a presence.
That's actually a very good point. You know, when I think of LinkedIn, I don't even think of that, but I probably get 5 or 6 emails a week from different groups that I'm a member in, and they're all professional groups. They all have to do with current, you know, current events, current law changes, whatever, current cases. And I didn't even think of that. As far as generating business, it really doesn't do much, hasn't at least for me, but you do get updates on everything through there.
I'm a member of the Allegheny County Bar Association has a LinkedIn page. I'm a member of it. That allows them to send me emails in addition to the other emails that I get. You know, this is just one more way for bar associations and other people to stay in touch with you as part of groups. But again, something I think really everyone should consider having is a LinkedIn page. It's very easy, very similar to Facebook and Twitter. You go, there's a big sign that says, join us. You fill out some general information, your page pops up. It's a 5-10 minute process at most, and then you can add as much or as little information as you want. The next one we're moving to is YouTube. I think most people have seen YouTube used in a kind of social way. You know, you might have watched a funny movie about a cat rolling around on the ground or watch some crazy video highlight of a sporting event. But a lot of people are actually using YouTube to promote their business as well. Any commercials that you may have or any video that you might have on your website, you can upload to YouTube as well. Why is this important? Not just so that other people can see you, but Google owns YouTube. So they have a vested interest in making sure that YouTube does well. And so anytime you're going to be on YouTube with any type of video, it's going to help your rankings in Google. And you always want to help your rankings in Google so that your web page always creeps to the top when they search, you know, Greensburg, Pennsylvania bankruptcy lawyer or Greensburg, Pennsylvania tax lawyer. If you have more going on with Google, the higher you're going to rank. And so that's why I think YouTube is something to consider. If you do have video on your website now, or you want to do what I called kind of a video diary or information sessions, it's you sitting in front of a camera and saying, let me give you the 101 course on bankruptcy court. And you sit down, you give a very direct, they can see your face, they can hear your voice, you have a very direct lesson on how bankruptcy court works. That's not only going to help you connect with your clients, but it's also going to help you come up higher in the rankings because Google and YouTube are so closely connected.
YouTube is limited by its length. You only put on so much, right? 10 minutes at a time.
Correct.
And then also, the more people will see your video, the better you tag it.
Correct.
The more specific you are with your tag,
right,
the more attraction you'll get to it, correct?
Correct. And so when you put your video on, you don't want to just say, Michael Quattrini video. You want to put workers' comp, specific loss and workers' compensation case, period. So now you have a very direct word association with your website and your name, so that if anyone were to put in a Google search, you know, lost right arm, Greensburg, Pennsylvania attorney, workers' compensation, it's going to help you pop up a little bit higher than most people, because you now have that video associated with it, and that video is very specific as to what you're talking about.
Then you always link everything together. So you would link your YouTube video to your website to your YouTube video to your Facebook account, to link them all up, and then they all kind of help each other generate the traffic.
The next, I touched on Google in here as well. The only thing that I wanted to give everyone a heads up, when you do Google yourself, most times you'll get your little profile so that you kind of pop up first. It'll say Michael Quattrini, attorney at law, Greensburg, Pennsylvania. If you don't have that when you Google yourself, there's a way to contact Google to say, hey, I am Michael Quattrini. I would like to have my information there so that if someone recommends you, and as most people go to Google now instead of the phone book, your contact information is immediately going to pop up. Not just your website, but you really want your own contact information to pop up as soon as possible. So go home, Google yourself. If it doesn't work, try to go through Google to set that up. If you have any trouble, you're more than welcome to call Anthony and I to do that. But I think it's crucial to do it. Also, I wanted just to talk about Google because they're connected to YouTube. The last kind of social media we're going to talk about is blogging. Anthony and I wrote a article in the sidebar a few months ago about the Westmoreland County Bar Association blog. It's short for weblog, and this is an opportunity to have your own little personal website that you can update as you want. All of our websites that we have are pretty fixed information. This allows you to have something that you can update all the time. And it's different from Facebook or MySpace or any of these user-based programs because it goes out to the entire internet. You don't have to be a user of a certain program. You can just look at my blog anytime you want. And Anthony has one directly on his site. Do you want to show him the Bar Association one? Yeah. This is actually the Bar Association blog. We recently posted, this is just information related to the practice of law. The PBA supported a child custody bill that passed the local Pennsylvania House. We've also posted everything on here from updates on marketing strategies. This is a really nice firm that's in your, or really nice website that's in your packet here on marketing strategies for law firms. We've posted kind of interesting articles on the authentication of the Jefferson wine bottles, the legal dispute behind that. So it's a little bit of everything. And but we try to include as much information about technology in there, legal-based technology, bar-related news. But as long as you go to that website, you don't have to be a member of anything. But it's something that you can do as well. And I think right next to that one is mine. And so, we post different newsletters on here. We post the articles that Dennis Rafferty was recently in. So it's a way for us to kind of continually update our website without updating our actual website. There are some other social media sites to consider. You can see on here. We didn't go into them. You can check them out on your own. JD Supra is an opportunity for you if you have a really good brief or you have a really good article that you'd like to write on an actual legal topic. You can actually go there and upload it. And maybe people will see it and then contact you about that really difficult legal issue you had because they really liked your brief. So it's a kind of a self-publishing website, relatively new. I'm going to let Anthony talk about kind of the user. Just to give you a little bit of a perspective on usage among attorneys and among the actual sites themselves. Wait, I don't know what. Keep going back. There you go. Yeah.
Right here?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you can see Michael had touched on earlier about the difference between Facebook and MySpace. Those right there are unique monthly visitors. And as you can see, there's a major, major difference. That's just in 1 month. You're looking at almost 30 million visitors different for Facebook and MySpace. And I would say if you went back about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, MySpace was probably actually higher than Facebook. And I actually read this morning that Facebook, and I didn't know this, but when Facebook initially came out, it came out specifically for college students, and you actually needed a college email address to open a Facebook account. They wouldn't let any non-college people onto Facebook. And I think what happened was it became so popular that they opened it up. And, I mean, there are so many adults on there now. And my parents, I'm friends with my parents' friends on Facebook. Sometimes I don't know if that's such a wonderful, wonderful idea. But, no, but to be honest with you, like I said, I I get to screen whatever I write on there, so I'll never write anything to offend anyone, obviously. And I don't write anything that isn't me. So, and then Twitter is just pretty much brand new here over the course of about a year and a half, I'd say. It's becoming more and more popular. It's absolutely huge for famous people in the media. I could, like, for example, just Wednesday, the United States soccer game, during the local news, or no, not the local news, during ESPN that night, they were showing celebrity responses to the USA game, and it was all through Twitter. So I think Serena Williams said something, you know, like, so proud to be an American or something like that, but it's easy for them to jump on there. They don't have to interview the person. They get real-time updates on the quotes. So that's, like, one of the biggest things for Twitter. That's one of the main things I see with Twitter is news updates, celebrity input, and stuff like that. But like I said before, if you do it right, linking your website and writing the right types of terms and things on your statuses, it's going to drive traffic to your website and eventually increase business for you too. And by terms, I mean what happens is there's a lot of automatic search engine type softwares out there for Twitter wherein different groups and media will search specific terms. And like to give you an example, I think I had a DUI preliminary hearing one day and I just wrote that on Twitter. And then like by the end of the day, I had like five people following me, five either people or organizations relating to DUI or drunk driving, because what they do is they search for DUI and then anybody that writes something like that, they find them and follow them. So if you can, you know, you can really guide the type of audience that you want if you stick to one specific topic. So if you're always writing about divorces and family laws and custody disputes and everything, you're going to eventually see that all the people that are interested in those topics are going to be following you.
And we're running a little bit short on time. So you can see in your packet the different level of usage among attorneys of the different social media websites. But one of the things I really wanted to touch on before we were done today were the personal pitfalls and the professional and ethical pitfalls that do come with social media. So we're here cheerleading it on that you should do it, but there are things that you should consider. And a couple of those are that, you know, you should be aware that credit rating agencies, potential employers may be looking, or potential adversaries are looking at your social media websites. I will look at other attorneys' websites. I will look at their Facebook pages if they have them, just to check them out a little bit. And most recently, Florida is now checking Facebook pages, Twitter accounts, when they look at you to become a member of the bar. So I passed my bar exam. Now it's time for fitness and character evaluation. They're going to look to see, what's your Facebook page look like? Does it look like you're out drinking three nights a week? Does it look like, you know, man, I totally aced that exam without even trying? They'll take that stuff into consideration. So it's something that we wanted to bring to your attention in terms of personal pitfalls that you should kind of keep your act as clean as possible online, because we're all professionals. And, you know, it's one thing for a bunch of college kids or high school kids to put a whole bunch of silly stuff on there. But once you get to a more professional age, it's something you want to always take into consideration because people are going to be looking at you.
Yeah, and just real quick, a couple of the rules that I have is I never befriend clients on Facebook unless they were a friend before they were a client. And even though I like all of them, I don't befriend judges. It's not because I don't want them to see something in particular. It's just because there kind of needs to be that wall or that, you know, little window there. At least that's the way I feel, you know. I don't want to see what people are writing on their walls. And, you know, I don't necessarily care if they see what people are writing on my walls because my site's pretty clean. But I just don't do it. And I think you had mentioned before there was actually a state that actually made that a
in Florida,
their local rule.
Yeah, and again, in Florida, the Florida Bar Association has recommended that judges and lawyers not be friends on social media sites because, again, that makes a big difference. But in terms of professional pitfalls, I'll talk about this one, and I'll let Anthony talk about the next one. It's very helpful in conducting research. You talked about using a MySpace printout to, you know, say, look, you say that you sleep in, you know, you go to sleep every night at 8 o'clock. You never drink. You never smoke. You're just a real saint. Well, your Facebook page showed me that the last four nights you've been in a bar, and it, obviously it's much more integral to that, and there's going to be a lot more questioning, but it's something, again, you should consider about witnesses and everything else. Now, what I thought was, yes, you could do it in a formal request or subpoena. If you can't find it, you don't want someone to go digging in someone's social media website for bad information. And the no I had put there was exactly that. Lawyer has to cross-examine someone, wants to know what's on their Facebook page, just to, you know, get a little bit of info about them. Knows that if they friend that person, the person's probably going to say no. So they went back to the office, had their paralegal friend that adversary witness, and then figured out a whole bunch of stuff about it, only to get caught. And they talk about it in the Pennsylvania Rules of Ethical Conduct that, you know, you should not be using non-lawyers to dig up bad information. And then it also goes to the truthfulness and statements to others that you don't want to be trying to get around what you shouldn't be looking at. So just consideration. The best way to do it is formally ask for all social media, you know, statements. This may relate to clients, to copyright infringements. But it, if worse comes to worst, you can always subpoena the information. And keep in mind that all these social media sites, they collect the data that is currently there. But the stuff you deleted is also there. So if you're really in heavy litigation, know that they might have posted something and they might have deleted it. You may still be able to find it because the servers at these social media places still have it on their servers.
Mark, when you do your workers' comp, you find the insurance carriers are asking you for all your people. I mean, they used to send people around with cameras and stuff. Now they can just ask your clients for all their social media stuff.
So what they did, the same people that do, I just recently had a case where they followed the person around. The person had never left the house, and so that was good for our client. But I also noticed in the report for the first time ever that in addition to listing, you know, went to person's house A, did not see anything, second day, third day, they also had an entire listing of all their social media associations. So I saw a picture of this kid's Facebook site. It was clean. He had a hat on. They checked to see if he had a Twitter account. He didn't have a Twitter account. They checked MySpace. And so, yes, that's one of the things that we now have in our introduction letter to our clients. Listen, if you have social media pages, you might want to clean them up. Might not want to put a picture of you skydiving, yeah, or weightlifting, you know, at least until after we settle your case. Right. So anyway, yes, but yes, that's a great question, and I put it in there that that's
the skydiving, though.
Yes, right.
We were at a deposition. They said, "Were you ever injured before?" To my guy, this was in a PI case. He says, "No." So what about the skydiving accident? like you might forget that.
Right. Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah. You want to talk about these ones a little bit?
Yeah, we already kind of touched on the judges and attorneys being friends. Mentioned a couple of the things that could go wrong with that. Another thing is even if it's a great relationship, that could hurt you too, because, I mean, if another attorney sees, you know, a judge writing on your Facebook account something, you know, that the two of you are going somewhere or meeting for lunch or doing whatever, then we want everything to be clean in our business. You don't want any red flags to be raised. Expert witnesses and attorneys being friends, again, same exact thing. You know, if you have an expert witness, if you can show that they're Facebook friends and that they've interacted on Facebook and discussed certain topics or whatever, same thing. Use of social media by jurors, Michael had already mentioned that. One of the things, and I don't know if we have enough time, but if anybody is interested, I can bring it up. An article that I wrote on my blog, there was an issue, I think, in Philadelphia where a law clerk of a judge had befriended a juror shortly after the jury trial. Caused a big stink. So that's just another example.
This is also the part about telling your clients to, you know, make sure you keep it as simple as possible, because defense attorneys, insurance companies will read your client's Facebook information, all that stuff that we talked about.
I'm sure if you, anybody who does any type of family law, if you ask Bruce Tobin how many printouts of MySpace pages he's seen, I'm sure it's tons, because I know I've personally showed him tons of them. You know, Most recently, I have a stepmother of a child just completely bad-mouthing the mother. And I printed out everything and had everything and showed it right there. And the girl's, the dad's jaw kind of hit the floor. But, you know, that's why, you know, everybody always says anything you write on the internet echoes forever. So, like Michael said, even if it's deleted, it's still there.
These were just takeaway lessons for today. We said don't be afraid. You know, again, we want you to wade in clearly as possible. But even if you are afraid, you got to get over it. And you should, you know, try the most simple thing. Try the LinkedIn page. You know, try the Facebook page with the privacy controls set to the highest point. So you can kind of feel it out a little bit. And as you feel it out, you'll get more comfortable with the different things. Anthony was reading about Office having technology usage policies. You know, if it's just you, you're a single practitioner, you know, you have your kind of own internal. But if you have a lot of people using a lot of different computers, it's kind of like at our office, we have a technology usage policy. You shouldn't be on Facebook too much of the day. You know, you shouldn't be putting bad things about your boss on there. I got yelled at about that a lot. And but, you know, it's good to have, you know, not just for email, not just for the actual usage of the hardware, but you might want to adopt a social media and technology policy for the rest of the rest of the group.
And if you do end up getting one of your friends on Facebook as a client, you better make sure, not that you wouldn't anyway for any client, but you better do everything in your power to make sure that you get a good result for them. Not because, I mean, obviously if they're a friend or a family member, they're most likely not going to badmouth you anyway and you're going to have the relationship, but the thing that has helped me so much is any times that I've represented my friends from Facebook, and they'll write something on my wall, like, "Hey, thank you so much for your help." Whatever. And then, you know, all the other 500 and some 600 people see that, and that's just another thing that is registered in their memory.
And one of the last kind of things we wanted you to think about today, one of the commentators said, "Is it malpractice for offices to shut off social media to their employees?" And what we mean by that, I have a friend that works at a law firm. He cannot get onto his Facebook page at work. They block it. They don't want you wasting time on it. But as we talked about today, if you can't get onto the Twitter page or Facebook or MySpace, well, how are you going to know whether the adverse witness or the juror is tweeting or putting stuff on their Facebook page? I'm not sure. But he actually threw around the idea of malpractice. But it's something to consider that instead of blocking it outright, maybe you should let them use it a little bit in the office for that specific purpose. And then we just put a little bit of different reading. I will tell you, a must read is the April 2010 PBA Quarterly Journal. I had thrown it on a stack and just started to read it about 3 weeks ago and realized it was all about social media. So it actually was very helpful in putting this presentation together. And so if you want more details than what we covered in an hour today, I think it was very well written. It was written from different perspectives by attorneys, by actual social media consultants for attorneys. One of the young ladies that wrote one of the articles was a lawyer in Philadelphia. Well, she quit. Now all she does is she's a consultant for law firms wanting to beef up their social media presence. And so they have a lot of good insight, a lot of good detail into how to do everything. And then just some other things that maybe you should consider looking at every so often.